Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Thursday, August 13th. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson, The Athletic. And guys, you two are at our fourth of, in 1 week, really, four media access opportunities in 1 week. Only one of them was full practice. The other one have been truncated to a lot of stretching and about 16 minutes of individual action. Pete Sampson, I will start with you. If you want to talk about stretching, we could leave the action to Priester, or you could go ahead and talk about the action you saw as well.
Yeah, I will skip over stretching. But I would say the things that were notable to me, tempo, Jerome Bettis Jr. came out with as the starting boundary receiver. DJ McKinney had replaced Jaden Sanders as this number one field corner. And Matt Jeffrey subbed in with the starting offense while CJ Carr was still the quarterback. On the same day, they played Michael Jordan highlights. So is that a coincidence? I'll leave it up to listeners to decide.
Also noteworthy, of course, we'll talk about this more because we have questions about it, but Blake Hebert was not in attendance at practice again, so the two freshman quarterbacks were second teamers. And yeah, McKinney, as Pete noted, McKinney, not shocking, but McKinney running with the number ones at the field cornerback spot. Dallas Golden out.
Clothes and working out, right? Is that right?
Say that again?
Street clothes and in the pit. Is that
correct?
Yeah.
And so Jaden Sanders is working as the number two nickel behind Christian Gray running with the one. So now, I mean, let's be real about these 3 and 4 period observations. It's almost unfair because what we observe then is turned into fact by other outlets that pretend to be at practice and say things that aren't really accurate because it's the first 20 minutes of practice and they're just getting loose and warmed up. So
I found out, I think our readers did a good job, Tim, because I found out Armel Mukum won the starting job on our message board. And before I could even get in there, at least 20 of our readers refuted it and said, "You don't know what you're talking about. They are just rotating."
So, well, that's good.
There we go.
See? Although he did run with the ones again. And I think the best thing, Pete can agree or disagree with this, I think the best thing that came out of yesterday were the interviews with Joe Rudolph, the offensive line coach, and Charlie Partridge, the defensive line coach. We were able to get in a bunch of questions about, you know, people we've been curious about. And I enjoy talking to Charlie Partridge. I don't think that he's a guy that is inclined to say something about a player if it isn't accurate. And he said some good things about players yesterday, which I take a little bit to heart because I don't think that he's going to blow smoke when it comes to guys that he thinks can participate when the season gets rolling.
We'll see. You know, it's, you know, like all these coaches, I think are, I was with Joe Rudolph yesterday and he was complimentary of everybody. So it's like kind of when you're complimentary of everybody, you're sort of complimentary of nobody because it's there, you know, some guys are ahead of others. So it's kind of hard to tell off interviews. It's harder to tell watching 25 minutes of practice, but yeah, like what happens with Matty Augustine being out for a while is interesting. Joe Rudolph talked about, I think, Styles Prescott now being the third tackle. Is that ideal? Probably not. You know, what are they on the interior? Is Ashton Craig really a solution at guard? Ashton Craig said he'd been taking reps there a little bit. So the coaching staff at least wants to try that out. And, you know, what have we seen from Joe Rudolph the last 2 years? There's something in camp that seems to be like, wow, they're trying that. Ashton Craig at guard would be the, wow, they're trying that. And, you know, if we sort of see that, like we're out there Sunday, maybe if we see it on Sunday, then maybe a thing is happening there.
Yeah. You know, when we saw Sam Pendleton working a guard early in camp, we definitely used the fallback that we're still using on other people now. Well, we only see 20 minutes of it. I don't get the feeling. I mean, they rep it because Emil Wagner repped at guard. Remember, it was reported he was starting at guard a couple years ago.
And that was by a member of the actual media.
Yeah. I would say that, and he was obviously starting at tackle, but that means he repped at guard. I think Joe Rudolph, once injuries hit, and they always do on the offensive line, he probably needs to find the next man in that's the actual next man in, not just the depth chart next man in. And Matty Augustine was probably the next man in at three, if not four positions. If not left tackle, he was right tackle, left guard, and right guard. So that does hurt because the other next man in at every position would be Charles Jagusa. So you've now lost your possibly your best lineman in Jagusa, your next most versatile lineman in Augustine. and your best center is somewhat, in some way, compromised. In some way, he's compromised. It's fair to say still, Ashton Craig. I mean, I'm sure he'll be fine. But that tests your depth pretty quickly. Guys improved, Tim Priester, but if Styles Prescott didn't improve, that will be a huge drop-off from tackle to Styles Prescott.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, I would flat out say that Augustine's a backup for four spots.
For four spots, I'm sure.
I mean, all four spots. And so that's a significant loss. It's good to – I've never heard any information volunteered about Styles Prescott doing something impressive. Was it offered – because now he's had to move up a little bit. Not sure about that, but you know that. I mean, that's a guy that we've seen get it. He's gotten a ton of number two reps in the last year plus.
He got some ones in the spring, but he got beat. Remember, he got because he could elevate Will Black immediately. He was a redshirt freshman, so Styles Prescott was with the ones. Wait, wasn't Styles Prescott ahead of Emile Wagner when Wagner was here? Because Wagner was sitting out the whole spring too. Yeah, he's had plenty of number one reps. He had number one reps going into last year. Some of the highlights of spring practice where we were actually at the full practice was Rodney Dunham beating him. He beat Will Black too, but that was, I remember, I can still see it in print that he went right around Styles Prescott. Right. I can see it from above. So, but guys do improve. I mean, he's his third year in the program. It's not like you don't get better at offensive tackle with good coaching.
And I'm not surprised, Pete. I mean, I'm not surprised Craig at offensive guard. I mean, he had worked there a little bit prior to becoming the full-time center. Did he not? I believe he did. Anyway, I mean, first of all, it's Joe Rudolph. And so we know that he will throw somebody at guard if he feels he's one of the best five. I talked to Gerby Lambert yesterday and then, you know, like, were you surprised when he moved you to guard? And he said, well, yeah, kind of at first, but then you realize when you're around him and you see the other maneuvers that he makes with personnel, that if he thinks you have a chance to be one of the five best, he's going to get you on the field. And like in the instance of Will Black last year, he wanted him to get reps, you know, consistent practice reps. And the best way to do that was to move him into a guard spot and see what got. Lambert's appreciative now of the fact that he did play guard because the knowledge base, you know, that he has moving back to a tackle position, which he's most comfortable in because he spent most of his life playing there.
I want to read you guys some quotes about a player and get your reaction for the quotes, okay? So one of the quotes is high school. I'm sorry. No, both of the quotes are when he was on campus. And first, I'll give you his background a little bit. I'm going to remove the state and the city. Earned all-conference tier one as a wide receiver. Earned all-state honors as a defensive back. Now, when he got on campus, they said, that guy's a freak athlete. He's going to be amazing no matter what he does. He's already making us better. So it'll be very cool to see how he develops. Another comment was, he's fast, super twitchy, ridiculously athletic. He's very strong, really just a great all-around athlete. I heard he hit 22 miles an hour wearing football pads last fall. So that sounds like a really good athlete, right? And if I read that out and we were having a recruiting saying, can Notre Dame get this guy on campus? Is this a former five-star? That's Matt Jeffrey. So maybe people could chill out a little bit when they hear things about walk-ons. If that was a guy named, oh, I don't know, any of the other guys they recruited in the last 2 to 3 years, people would be losing their minds that he wasn't on the field. So that was Matt Jeffrey. That's what was said about him, and that's what he did. He just happened to be the nation's number one lacrosse player, too. And that's why when Terry Benedict says, really funny comment, it's okay to have a former lacrosse player at wide receiver as you're leading your group. Is it okay to have two? Great question by Terry Benedict.
Well, nobody said that
he's leading it.
Nobody said Matt Jeffrey is leading the group.
No, but that's awesome.
But he's an excellent athlete. Look, if he can get on the field and catch, I predict he'd catch four passes.
He caught one against an SEC powerhouse, Arkansas, last year. Yes, 37 yards down the field, Red Purdue.
I mean, I you know, sometimes it's, we report too much. Maybe we see too. if it's going to be misinterpreted, then we just have to attach more disclaimers to it. And I didn't do a good enough job saying, I'm not saying that Matt Jeffrey's not going to start. I'm just saying he's going to be difficult to keep off the field because he's going to battle his ass off to get on the field.
He is going to. He's going to take someone's spot. So
look how many times he was on the field last year in a blocking role.
Yeah, he played 12 games last year. People have to get this. If I read you all those stats, what do you think people would think if it was one of the recruits on the team right now? Like, well, that's the, oh, who's that? He's going to play. You'd lose your mind if that was Braden Robinson. It's just ridiculous. I mean, he's clearly a great athlete. This isn't when people say walk on. First of all, that one of the 10 best players, 10 to 12, no matter what you want to rank him. People had him on our website. He was sixth. One of the undisputed 10 to 12 best players on this team is a former preferred walk-on. But so is one of the 25 in Luke Talich. So if Matt Jeffrey's one of the 50, that helps Notre Dame a lot. It's not like the guy came off this. It's not the old walk-on. Like they target these people because they know they can help. You know, there was one walk-on, Jerry Rulo, last year that was a old school, tried out and made the team. Now they have a couple, they have a couple running backs from the spring now. But like the walk-on thing, they don't come with that pedigree athletically. They're better than walk. They're better than scholarship players.
Well, right. And they're targeted and they're brought in. Max Hurlman, who's, I don't know if he's still in a camp in the NFL or where he is, but those guys are good athletes. I understand the reaction to you hearing Matt Jeffrey, but nobody's saying that he's going to be in the top, you know, rotation of six catching passes. He won't be. And you know, if Chris Fink were on the team now, he wouldn't be either, but the evolution of the wide receiver position at Notre Dame makes it more difficult for a Matt Jeffrey to crack the lineup than a Chris Fink.
We'll see. I mean, he was with the ones during tempo. They just draw names out of a hat.
Six receivers. So. I can see him being one of the top six receivers, but you mean pass catchers? No.
Pass catchers.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he was on the field a lot last year, but he was essentially blocking.
Right.
But I feel like you can see this coming a mile away. He's going to be taking reps from somebody that fans would like to see because they remember him from recruiting. That's just going to be how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Trying to put Matt Jeffrey's quotes next to players that don't have those quotes about him and see how people react.
Yeah. I just remember that Michael Jordan's middle name is Jeffrey as well. So
you wanted to drive home that joke, didn't you, Pete Sampson?
Yeah, I really did. I just came back to it. Yeah, the jerk store called later, O'Malley.
They did. Before we get to some rule changes I thought our listeners might like to talk about, we should swing back to Dallas Golden because while we expect Christian Gray to win the job no matter what, they really like Dallas Golden. I'm sure spelling Christian Gray at nickel. Remember, Dallas Golden learned that position in 1 week and did a heck of a job. Just he's had issues because everyone knows he missed half of spring ball with a back issue. And then we found out part of summer, too, when we were talking to Chris Ash, right, guys? Chris actually mentioned that.
Yeah.
Notre Dame's defense could use Dallas Golden. I know Jaden Sanders can do the role, too, but he's a heck of an athlete.
I still think Dallas Golden at his peak is one of the most skilled athletes Notre Dame has in the secondary. But, you know, when you're banged up, you don't get the opportunity to show it. They're going to have to be a little patient there. Man, we continue to get reminders as to why they went out and gotten two cornerbacks in the transfer portal. Yeah. Not only is DJ McKinney probably in line to be a starter, but Jaden Sanders is a useful tool for them at
and he'll be the starter if DJ McKinney isn't. Actually, that's
yeah, probably yeah. Probably yeah, there or and then he's also a guy that can, you know, slide into the nickel role, but yeah, they're probably going to have to be a little bit patient with Dallas Golden. It's a shame because I really think that his athleticism, his tool shed is full. And that's why, either side of the football, I could see them benefiting from Dallas Golden, but they got to get him healthy now.
There's some rule changes, official rule changes that came out. Some of these, I think, will affect your college football enjoyment on Saturdays. One of them just makes a lot of sense. And we're going to start with that one. Second half targeting no longer carries over to the next game unless you're a second time offender. So if it's your first time, it does not carry over. If it's a second time, it could, but you can appeal. But a third targeting offense is an automatic ejection from the game, no matter when it is, plus a suspension for the next game. That makes some sense. A third targeting in one season would make sense that you could eject him for the next game. You can also appeal that, but the dumbest rule of targeting was the next game that you missed the first half.
We need to start, keeping track of targeting penalties now.
I do wonder if it counts for last year. I doubt it. I'm sure it has to just be in the calendar year. That'd be tough. Because if you're a senior, you're going to get multiple targeting penalties over the course of time. Odd change, guys. I don't know if you saw this. 10 yards for offensive pass interference now instead of 15. So I guess the rule is if the ball's in the air, go ahead and shove somebody down so they don't pick it off. There's only a 10-yard penalty. Why would you change that rule? What does that do?
I really don't. I thought the same thing. What prompted the change?
I don't know. That's
it's not called that often. So, I mean, it's not like it's...
Yeah. Fair catches on punts and kickoffs if you want. You can have the official free kick is back in football. So if you're punting from your own end zone and it's a shank and it's the end of a half or something, you can get a free kickoff or a field goal. Who will be the first to do that when we watch a game? Do you think anyone?
I don't know. I still don't understand that rule.
So, all right. You know, a free kick means that it's a snap and a field goal and they can't do anything about it. So the defense. Yeah. Well, you don't think it's going to work on a kickoff? They're going to kick the ball straight in the air, land on the 50 for a 64-yard attempt or 67-yard attempt. Let's see. There's a lot of guardian caps can be allowed. So people that don't come to practice, if you see a weird-looking helmet, you can actually wear all the guardian caps we see in practice to prevent head injuries. You can actually wear them now in a game, which makes total sense. There'd be no reason not to. So I'm sure people will. And the most important one, I think, a coach gets two challenges. If he goes 1 for 2 on those replay challenges, he gets a third challenge. That's important later on in the game. The issue there is you have to have a timeout to be able to issue a challenge, because that's what you need to get a challenge. Anything that speeds up the game, Pete Sampson, for me, with the replay rule in college football. You agree, Tim? Speed it up?
Yeah,
single thing that's ever happened?
Yeah, I mean, college football, look, we love it, and the more the better, but there are certainly times. Was it the Stanford game last year that lasted 4 hours?
I feel like the Stanford game always lasts 4 hours. It's either the last game of the year or a really big game.
Well, that's where I appreciate, and it's not the same thing. You can't make a direct comparison, but I appreciate the fact that Major League Baseball made the necessary moves. I don't want to say to save the sport, but man, the sport was getting, even for baseball junkies, the sport was getting really, really long. 18 inning games on March 29th, it just seemed a little crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to mitigate the amount of time that's spent on commercial breaks. So Tim,
speaking of commercial breaks, we'll be back. Oh, Pete Sampson, I was interrupting you. I had a great segue there, but I'm going to go ahead and let you talk because I can see your.
No, I move along. Yeah, I think anything that moves along is a positive, much like anything that moves along this podcast.
Exactly. Speaking of commercial breaks, we'll be back with segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. We are back with segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. The first question from Sean OD64. Fill in the blank. Jordan Faison is the most confident you've been in a wide receiver #1 going into an ND season since. And after his blank, he wonders if it's Chase Claypool 2019.
Pete, go ahead.
I mean, confident, this is probably not the answer, but if Jordan Faison put up 48 catches for 888 yards and 7 touchdowns, would you take that or leave that?
I would take that.
All right, that's Kevin Austin.
I wondered about him.
So I think it's, even though I don't think anyone would look at Kevin Austin and like say, I'm confident in him because he had all those injuries.
It was one day in March 2020, Pete Simpson.
Oh, so good. yeah, probably most confident in like what's going to happen since Claypool. But like we would have said something similar about Jaden Greathouse last year at this time because of how the season ended.
Yeah. Kevin Austin was the name that I wrote down. I don't know how confident we were. You know,
a lot of things that happened before he
broke out. Claypool was just such a beast. You know,
it was MVP confident level, Chase Claypool, which he became. But I'm saying he was a dominant force. And we used to see practice where he would dominate it.
When I first read his question, I was thinking which player himself carried himself with that confidence.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I wrote down Rico Flores because that dude came in and took a spot right away and started catching passes. And I was really disappointed when he chose to leave after his freshman year. They've managed to compensate for that, but he still would have looked good in a Notre Dame uniform.
He would have. I will say, like, I guess I wouldn't have thought of being this confident in him, and I had him a little lower, but Irish Illustrated ranked Malachi Fields 8th coming into the season last year and Jordan Faison 6th, but I'm more confident in Jordan Faison because I had seen it on the field. But I was pretty high on Malachi Fields.
Yeah, I was
too. He had a heck of a year. He had a bad drop. Not a drop. Fumble against Miami, but he had a really good year. Made some amazing catches. Claypool was better than all those guys, though. Claypool was dominant for Notre Dame. And he was also the #1 guy on that team the next best player on that team skill position was Fink or Tony Jones. So, like, he didn't have Jeremiah Love and these guys to help him out. Oh, boy, he was good. Great segue, though, Tim Priester, how he carries himself. Faison's top tier on that. He carries himself with a lot of confidence.
No doubt. No doubt.
Next question. Play like a champ 7. lost in this playoff conversation and how last season ended is that Notre Dame won 10 games in a row by double digits. When does the win by double digits streak end?
It'll be something we don't expect. So yeah. I'm going to say something that you don't expect. because everybody's saying it's a dumpster fire there, but I'm going to say at North Carolina just because the raging dumpster fire may not be raging by the time Notre Dame goes there and plays. I don't know. You know, I mean, I would tend to pick a road game. You know, Marcus Freeman's in a 24-4 streak, and he's averaging his average win is by four touchdowns. So they're bludgeoning people, and I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of bludgeoning continuing this year. But somewhere along the line, we didn't expect the Boston College game to transpire the way it did. I mean, I think everybody felt uncomfortable watching that game. So somewhere along the line, that's going to happen. Could it be Wisconsin? I think Wisconsin's the fourth best team on Notre Dame's schedule. I'm glad they're playing Colton Joseph in his transfer from Old Dominion in their first game because – I think I may have said that in a podcast previously, but I think once he gets rolling, he might be pretty, you know, might be pretty good, but his nerves have to be on end playing against Notre Dame in Lambeau Field in his first game in the FBS. So what if you go to Syracuse and you're 11-0? I don't know. That's why I think spent way too much time on preseason predictions.
Over Miami as a 10-point win.
Yeah. Well, if you beat Miami by plus 10.
You better not lose. You better beat Syracuse by plus 11. I can tell you that much.
I think they'll make it to Miami.
That's my question. Will they make it to Miami, Pete?
They'll make it to Miami and it'll end in Miami.
I say they won't because there'll be one rando in there.
Right.
I would not vote on North Carolina, but I wouldn't vote on any of them separately. You know what, I've been kind of thinking recently. You know, they have a short week for Rice. Then obviously it's not going to be Rice. I feel like maybe the residual of playing three games in
comes against Michigan State.
It's yeah, just, maybe. I don't know. You feel like they could get back up for that one. But I just feel like it will happen before Miami. That's our good bet, Pete Sampson, for the year is the 10-point win.
An easy one, I guess, to choose for that category would be at BYU, not at night. Did I really say that the other day?
I guess I did.
It's going to be at night. It'll still be a challenging experience for Notre Dame because of everything that transpired with the playoffs and the bowl game and Bear Bachmeyer and, you know, everything involved there. But I don't know. There'll probably be a bad opponent, where there's at least a struggle through the first half.
I have a good question for you guys. All right. Marcus Freeman's last 3 years, okay? So not his first year. His first year. Name the three wins by under 10 points. 23, 24, 25.
Well, Louisville in...
That's one.
In 24.
Duke.
Yep. And the other one's the easiest one. You guys just started thinking inside that box. We're talking playoffs. The most famous.
Wait, you eliminated the first year, so I can't include Cal.
Yes, Cal was one I limited the first year because there was a couple.
No, Navy, it's just
Navy in the first year also. Navy, Cal, and and BYU. Actually.
The cover zero game.
Yes. Penn State, as people, of course, remember, was a
very Oh, was yeah.
Yeah. And we move on, but I think that's interesting. They don't win many games by under double digits. They lose a couple by under double digits if you want to start nitpicking, but we'll wait on that one. From Phil Fell, on a scale of JJB to RJ Oben to Chris Smith, what are your thoughts on the start of camp and estimated performance for Keon Keeley? And then he has some future questions, but he'd like to know is he just going to be a guy that flashes? Is he just a guy or is he a reliable third end?
You know, I think we're going to find that out. I spent time with Charlie Partridge talking about him and it was good to hear, you know, again, something positive about Keeley. We take everything with a grain of salt, but you know, and this makes sense. We've heard this before and he and Partridge said, I was kind of doing this myself, Partridge himself, that, you know, terminology in the spring, he said Keeley was a little bit hesitant, but I think he came to Notre Dame with a little bit of a rap about not just turning it loose. And we didn't see him turn it loose in the spring. And there were reasons for that. And I'm not sure, Pete, I don't know if you've seen anything that says Keon Keeley has turned it loose here in the preseason. I haven't seen it. I'm not saying it hasn't happened. But he did speak highly of him yesterday. He said there is a role for for Logan Thomas, but you have to use him appropriately because of some of the size issues, you know, that he's had. And he said Rodney Dunham's in that group. He didn't put Iwatade in that group.
Said he was developmental.
He was developmental. But I think we can see the skill set there. There's a lot to develop there. But it was good to hear something positive about Keeley. Now let's see if we can. We're not going to see it in the preseason. Let's see if it shows up when they get to Green Bay.
RJ Oben this year, JJB next year. That's how I'd answer this question.
That's a good one. That would work too for Notre Dame because they could use it next year when they lose Uwakar Traore.
Yeah, well, they could probably use him better than RJ Oben this year too.
I think they could sit Keon Keeley for the entire season, except for Miami, and put him in the playoffs. And if he sacks the quarterfinal quarterback to win the championship or to win the game, I'd be happy for him because that was the play of the year defensively. That was incredible that RJ Oben pulled that off. Guys, think about that. He was written off completely.
Well, yeah, like we're sitting there and that, is that you're like was
squinting.
That was Oben.
It's our job to know all these players.
I mean, good for him because it was a rough season for him. And I liked his film, you know, at Duke, but it did not translate at Notre Dame.
All right. By the way, Marcus Freeman 7-7 in games decided by under 10 points. So there you have it.
We have question number 4 from Padrake 10. Assuming last year's running back room was an A+, based on what you've seen, what is a reasonable projected grade for this one? And are there any areas where you could see this room being better than last year's running back room?
B-, B. It's fine.
Yeah, I think I've seen a B-. What I've heard is probably a B+. If you talk about Jonas Walton and Nolan James, how coaches talk about those guys. But from what we've seen, I think Aeneas Williams is going to be very good. And then I'm hopeful for the others. I think Nolan James is solid, and I would have said wait a year for Jonas Walton. But now I don't say that. Now I think he'll make an impact this year because that was top tier praise by Juwan Slater. That's yeah, like Pete, putting yourself out there if you're wrong. It was so
Pete,
high.
Pete, you got to admit that that praise was a little bit different than some of the other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. If you can give me something more specific, which Juwan Slater did for Jonas Walton, then you're not just listing names.
Yeah.
Jonas Walton, I'm on board with that one.
Like I don't see Aeneas Williams as anything worse than a B+.
Frankly. Oh no, yeah. He'll be really good. It's just the whole room. You got to count the whole room. I mean, there's three guys that'll play. I think Aeneas Williams looked great in camp. Like if I were to, for the little bit we've seen, he looks so quick to me through the hole and strong and patient. I think he's gonna have a really good year. The one spot they could be better is because they weren't good at it would be short yardage. Aeneas Williams and Nolan James could be better than Price, Love, and Carp.
Yeah, and I wonder, and obviously Jeremiah Love was good catching a football. I wonder if they're just placing a greater emphasis on that because Sider, when I asked Sider about Nolan James being targeted in practice, he said, we just want all of our running backs to be viable, you know, candidates to catch the football. But I wonder if they're emphasizing it a little bit more, especially now that you have, you know, Carr's a year older, another year of experience. I think he was reluctant to ever check down last year. I think he'll be a little bit more patient at times when the situation dictates it. Maybe not, because he's got an itchy trigger finger for downfield. But I think they're emphasizing throwing the football to the running back more. And so maybe that's an area where, you know, beyond just Jeremiah Love, they can do some things.
Next question from ND2525. At which positions can Notre Dame lose its top two players and still make a playoff run? Obviously, quarterback doesn't count, and I have added personally no kicker and punter in that one either.
Oh, you did? Okay, well, that was a good idea. That was a real good idea.
Yeah, use that. That's no fun.
Because that's probably a pretty significant drop-off.
Is a playoff run making the playoffs?
Yeah, playoff, make the playoff, or maybe win a game, or you know what I mean?
11-1, okay.
Yeah. Win a game in the playoffs, too. It doesn't count if you lose, right? Like, you lose like you're Alabama, you didn't make the playoffs. You're just
I wouldn't pick a position on the offensive side of the ball.
I mean, none on offense.
Yeah. Could you lose Bowen and KVA? And as long as the other three stay healthy, I think you'd be okay.
As long as you just also didn't lose Traore and
right.
Brew.
Yeah.
who are the two best defensive tackles right now? That's really kind of up for debate.
Brew is one.
Okay. So let's say Brew, just because of his pure physicality.
And he's made plays at the college level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to seeing him play.
I am too. If you lost Brew and Traore, like Pete said.
I was talking tackles specifically.
I'll say Onye then. Brew and Onye, just for the heck of it. Oh, no. Do you guys get the feeling that I wish I was there for Partridge, because my question was, like, have they settled in a little bit that Mukum, Teon Gray, and Sevilano are the nose tackles? Because they do rotate with a defensive tackle every time in Brew, Onye, and Hughes. Like, Brew, Onye, and Hughes aren't nose tackles. And right. They're always in there with a nose tackle. So do you think the rotation has something to do with those guys staying? Like, when you say Onye and Brew could win a job, that means Onye's got to play nose tackle.
Yeah, and
he's done it before, but I don't know if he was successful at it. You know, that was back in the day when they're moving him around. I'm going to ask Ash that. We do get Ash one more time. That's probably something he could answer. But that was a Charlie Partridge question I had. You couldn't lose a Don Shuler and Tay Johnson, right?
No.
And you don't want to lose Leonard Moore because it's no fun. So linebacker. I will say linebacker. Okay. All right. Don't you think?
I think the only two viable, when I say viable, I mean, how many teams can lose their top two players
right
at a position and make a playoff run? I don't, you know, but I defensive tackle and linebacker are the only two that I would even
and not together.
Wildly suggest.
Not together.
Healthy. Andy 25-25. This need to be just their top player at each position group.
Yeah.
Then you could have a conversation.
So Traore, a linebacker, and Leonard Moore.
I mean, corner, no.
No, they lose to Miami.
Safety, no. Quarterback, no. Running back, no.
At this point, probably nickel, no.
Offensive line, no.
Receiver, no way. Because then it's all in prison.
Yeah. Not many spots.
Yeah. Linebacker, there you go. The backup linebackers are almost as good as the two best linebackers. That's probably the way to. I think that's fair. Those three guys can do the job. Next question. Irish Flyer 96. How has Marcus Freeman evolved in his offensive mindset? Where do you see his thumbprint on the offensive side of the ball? He had a long prelude to this about Tommy Rees was hired to be the offensive coach at the time and all that, but he's now going into year number five.
You know, I don't know that it's like any specific set of plays or anything that specific. I just think aggression in general. Did Marcus Freeman start out? I mean, I could still see the look on his face in the first few games where, you know, the whole setting and the whole situation was a little bit overwhelming, of course. But
First few games weren't awesome.
No, they weren't. They were not. But as he's moved along and you know, I think Mike Denbrock brought out some of that aggression in him when he, you know, named him as offensive coordinator. Probably wasn't as inclined to be that aggressive with Jared Parker as his coordinator. Like, do you have anything specific offensively that you would pin on Marcus Freeman?
I wouldn't. They just have better players now. So then you're going to be better on offense. And you can probably be more aggressive. I think going for it on fourth down is not really just a thumbprint, fingerprint. On offense, that's more philosophical. So I don't like, are they running more outside zone because of Marcus Freeman? No, I don't think that's his area of expertise. And I don't think he pretends to try to make it that right. way. So I don't think there's really a thing here. Just like their quarterbacks have gotten better year over year. The receivers are better now. And then they've had really good offensive lines for the most part and really good running backs for the most part. So I think this is an interesting question for later this year, because at some point I want to ask Marcus Freeman, like, you, because they've talked about how everything is built around the run game. Why would you build your offense around the run game when you have CJ Carr?
Well, who said that?
Mike Denbrock has said that.
Denbrock said the identity of Notre Dame football is a strong running game. I don't know that he came out and said, we're going to run the ball as much as we did last year, and we're not going to let CJ Carr throw for 3,500 yards.
No, but if I was building, if you were like, hey, here's your offensive talent, you decide what you want to build around. I wouldn't go the run game. I'd go the quarterback.
No, I agree. I think that that was kind of company line kind of stuff. Saying that a little bit, and because Marcus Freeman is always, you know, offensive line, defensive line driven, and I like that notion. I you love to be able to fall back on it's third and one, and we're going to kick your ass and.
But that is
move the chains and. Yeah, well,
which they stunk at last year, but I was just like, this would be an offensive mindset thumbprint moving things forward or changing at least or evolving if you put more on the quarterback. So that's. Well, I'd be interested to sort of see if they go that way.
And you probably only have them for one more year. So you better maximize the opportunity with CJ Carr. But I understood where Denbrock was coming from, having, you know, been around Notre Dame football and 350 yards rushing per game in the 70s. You know, that's how Notre Dame wants to be identified. But you have CJ Carr, and you absolutely have to take full advantage of that with a deeper receiving core and a lead guy in Jordan Faison, who is established and a guy that, you know, I think he can be. I think there's a chemistry between Carr and Faison that, when in doubt, get him the football and let him create.
I think Marcus does a good job of allowing himself to be the head coach, have an imprint on the defense, and have Joe Rudolph as the running game coordinator. Gino Bittulli is the passing game coordinator, and he coordinates the passing game, and Mike Denbrock calls the plays, and they have a pretty good thing going with it. And I'm with Pete. I would lean on CJ Carr. When people say IU ran 62% of the time, IU had a good running game last year, and they were very physical. They also had the Heisman Trophy winner quarterback, but I want to point out, you can't say someone ran 62% of the time, because every winning team runs 62% of the time, because you're up by 27 points at the end of games. Like, Joe Burrow's team ran plenty in the final statistic. It is a proven fact over 50 years. I can send you the graph. First and 10, you average 2 more yards per game if you pass than run. The best teams pass on first down, but can run on second, third, and fourth. You pass more on first down to win in modern college and pro football. There's no doubt about it. You set yourself up for success. The only thing is, if you don't get it, Tim Priester, you can't hand off on second and 10, right? Otherwise, we're back to the 2011 restates.
So. Theoretically, you can't hand off on second and 10.
Jeremiah Love all you want. No, I know. Pass first, and you can run people to death, but you still have to be able to pass the ball, and they will.
Okay, we have a question from Donnelly 3434. Logan Saldate, Jack Larson, Styles Prescott, Cole Mullins, Kahanu Kia, and Brandon Logan. What are your thoughts on the development of these players? We already talked about Prescott, so let's set him aside. Logan Saldate hasn't been at the forefront of the receiving core that we could see so far in August.
I think they basically have recruited or are in the process of recruiting over the top of all of these guys.
I agree.
Yeah, Jack Larson a little bit undersized. They need him as a blocker. I remember the reaction of Marcus Freeman last year when Larson came in and was in a blocking situation and didn't handle it real well. Cole Mullins, my favorite there for a while, especially after the Arkansas game, but he hasn't made much headway. Kahanu Kia was running tempo with the twos yesterday, for whatever that's worth. Brandon Logan, when you talk about recruiting over guys, you know, the length that is happening in the secondary now for Notre Dame, Brandon Logan under 6 foot, I think it's going to be really difficult for him. Not just because of the height, just because of the talent that's been collected back there.
I want to ask Biagi at the end of this. Do we get Biagi again? Probably not. We already have him twice. I want to ask Biagi in week one or week two if Brandon Logan's on the special teams, because he's so fast and can be aggressive. That would be – he's not beating someone out of state. They have great talent now in the defensive backfield. But he seems like a guy that could help you a lot on special teams, Brandon Logan. Kahanu Kia has always been part of special teams despite injuries. Those are kind of the guys I would see there. Well, I want to see James Flanagan more and see how he's developed, because he was – nowhere near as close to the field as I would have guessed by the end of last year. I'm not saying the beginning of last year, that's not fair. But I want to see James Flanagan, if he will be part of like the blocking schemes, if he's coming in on instead of Ty Washington, maybe for blocking, because it sure seems like that would be his niche role.
I don't know about you guys, but Ty Washington's caught more passes at tight end than anybody else that I've seen so far.
Yes, I haven't seen a lot of it, but they've all been the little dump offs, right?
Yeah.
As soon as you said, I don't know about you guys, I was like, I know what he's going to say, right?
You knew what I was going to say. I really like Drew Mentok from Irish Illustrated wrote a story the other day, top 10 impressions from the first 3 days. And I thought he did a really nice job with it. And one of them was that Ian Premer has to be, he's got to be the pass catcher at tight end. And I agree with that. I know you said during the summer in one of the podcasts, you talked about Cooper Flanagan. You thought he would do that. And he still could. James Flanagan didn't catch it much in high school, but to be completely honest, I didn't think he looked like a real, like a premier pass catcher at tight end coming out of high school. So I think Premer has to do that in order to give this, give a nice balance to the distribution of the football through the air.
He's got his Premer. You're all over that one. They do need him. I think red zone.
Go ahead, Pete, if you want to comment on that. I'm sorry.
Oh, just, I mean, I realize it's a practice highlight and Notre Dame wants you to see it, but it's the nice catch one. Premer made in practice the other day that they put out on social media is ridiculous because
that's a good one.
Your body's not supposed to be able to move like that. Like, I think he turned the wrong way and then was able to turn around and track the ball and get a foot down. Like, that's freaky weird stuff. So no, the other tight ends can't do that. So I'm all for Ian Premer getting, let's force the issue a little bit there in the pass game.
I guess the question still stands about the development. You can't develop, everybody can't be developed. It doesn't work that way. And then with regard, we were talking about special teams, Tim. I was watching the defense yesterday. So defensive players that I saw, it was a kick coverage drill. Some of the defensive players we saw out there, we saw Rodney Dunham, would not be surprised if he saw action there. Teddy Rizak would be a guy. Kahanu Kia was one. Jane Sanders, I think, is a candidate for a whole bunch of special teams activity. Ebenezer Iwatade was out there. Kari Adams was out there. You know, again, with the 5-for-5 rule, you can put athletes like this on the field and not worry about using up a year of eligibility. Who else? Brandon Logan was out there, Tim. That was one of the defensive players out there. Luke Telich, not surprising. Aiden Pouncey. So, I think it's kind of exciting that you can, Notre Dame's got a lot of young players that probably aren't ready to play a position on a full-time basis. But, man, with a 5-for-5 role, if you trust them to put them out there on coverage and return, you can use those guys a whole bunch because you got a bunch of good players there that otherwise aren't going to get a whole bunch of snaps.
They have a good player for this next question, too. Drecker Recker 4, the staff seems to have considerable more faith in the field goal kicking unit ahead of this season. Do you think a more reliable kicking game will have any influence on Freeman's typically aggressive approach to fourth downs in positive territory?
Pete?
Is the offense better in short yardage? Because if it is, then that would maybe change the way I viewed that. I think the question is sort of like it's 4th and 3 from the 36-yard line. I think you go for that. And I think even if you have a really good kicker, you go for that.
I think Anthony Tresh will make him go.
What it should eliminate is the ridiculous end of the first half at Boston College when Bill O'Brien was like, you can't make a field goal. Just run it down here. I don't
care. That's right. Yeah.
So you're getting 3 points in that situation. But, you know, maybe it's, and I could see end of the half, 2 minute, you drive down, maybe it's a 1 minute situation where like, hey, we know we can get to the 35-yard line, but we're probably not going to score points here. Let's be aggressive and try to tack on this 3 before halftime. Maybe something like that. But I think just on 4th down, I don't think it probably changes a whole lot.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's a good question because, I mean, you would think that if you have greater trust in your kicker, you're going to go to him a little bit more. I think a lot of it has to do with time of the game and score differential and stuff like that. Like if you're embroiled in a hotly contested game and you have what you think with your new kicker is you're going to get 3 out of this to go up 10, you know, I mean, to go up by 2 scores and then you're probably going to do it. It's a good question, but I guess what I'm saying is I think that Marcus Freeman's still going to stay aggressive. This is a team they feel they can win the national title with, and he's going to go for it. He's not going to try to back into anything.
He leans very much on Tresh for these decisions going into the game, and I'll tell you why. In his first year when he had Drew Pine as his quarterback and Blake Groupie, Marcus Freeman was so aggressive, he went for it 115th out of 130 teams on fourth down. The next year when he had Sam Hartman, only 105th out of 140 teams, he had Spencer Schrader. Then he had Riley Leonard on fourth down, kind of easy thing to do, right? Hand in the ball, and the guys couldn't make a kick once Mitch Jeter got hurt, 22nd in the nation. And last year they were 28th because no one could hit a kick, and he trusted C.J. Carr. I think they have a plan, and C.J. Carr helps you go for it, though, a little bit more than Drew Pine and even Sam Hartman. Well, if you have a kicker, like, it's okay to take them, but every time it's fourth and two on the 36, Marcus Freeman's going for it. That's the plan before the game starts. Analytics he has now, and he is not afraid of going for it in those situations. But I would never – you don't pass up sure points when you have a sure points. They didn't have any points. Couldn't put the ball anywhere last year inside the 20-yard line, and they weren't going to hit the – it was terrible. They're awful. I mean, it was amazing. And people forget they were just as bad for the last 2 months in 2024 because then Jeter came back. It was
– Yeah, the four horsemen offense against Army.
It was – they couldn't kick. I mean, they were awful for a while, and now they will not be. Next question. Andy Yinzer, I'm glad he brought this back. I asked you over the summer and wanted to be interested to see if your perspective has changed based on viewings and, of course, coach commentary. Re-rank these freshmen in terms of full-year impact, not including special teams. Same guys from last time. Dunham, O'Brien, who was injured when we asked it, Walton, Fitzgerald, and Premer.
Okay, well, my number one is Premer. How about you guys?
Yes.
Yeah, he's 1A for me, and I can't get over what they said about Walton, so he's my 1B.
Okay, well, I have done him 2 because, I mean, as of now, Walton's still the third running back, right?
He is. I think Dunham's the fourth end, though, or fifth end. Fourth end,
probably. You think Keeley's ahead of Dunham?
I kind of do.
I want to see a game situation.
You think Jonas Walton staying behind Nolan James when he's the next guy that's going to the NFL? According to the I don't know about that either.
Well, that was what Jaywan Sider said about him. But we also, I mean, I don't think they're ready to throw Nolan James Jr. to the side.
No. I mean, spring practice, Jaywan Sider was incredibly complimentary of Nolan James Jr. Like in detail. Just as much as he was with Jonas Walton last week. So maybe he's
I don't know that he said he's going to play a long time past Notre Dame.
He said he prepared like a pro as a sophomore. Yeah.
I can see coaches loving Nolan James because of what he brings to your football team. But if Jonas Walton's that much more dynamic, he's got to take some snaps too. Nolan James will be able to block. He'll get short yardage. He can catch. He's going to not lose yards when I mentioned to Sider, I heard you say to him, that's why you follow it. He's like, you pick that up. That's what he does. If Walton's that special, I mean, he's going to get some snaps from him. But if you're a coach, I bet you love Nolan James. But if you were a coach, you love Nolan James as your starting running back. When you said Jeremiah Love, I don't think you would. I think you love him as your helpful running back.
So I had Premer 1, Dunham 2. You know, I mean, I'm going to remain very bullish on Devin Fitzgerald until somebody says, no, he's not in the rotation. So then my 4 was Walton only because he's 13, but I hear where you're coming from, Tim. And then 5, Joey O'Brien. Again, I think Joey O'Brien could end up playing a key role for Notre Dame, but he's, you know, he's definitely the fourth at best, competing with Ethan Long for the fourth safety spot.
I would go Premer 1, Walton 2, Dunham 3, O'Brien 4, Fitzgerald 5, just because I don't know. I don't know how many freshman receivers have flashed in camp, how many times this needs to happen before, like, actually they don't play, you know? Yeah. And Fitzgerald has done plenty of good stuff, but those guys just, they don't play.
I mean, he's a boundary wide out and there's a need there. And I mean, I just think as camp progresses here, Fitzgerald's going to get more and more reps with the big boys, and then we'll see what happens.
I would go Premer 1, Walton 2, Dunham 3, Cavernous Gulf to either Fitzgerald and O'Brien there. Here's the difference for O'Brien for me. He has two of the eight best college safeties in the sport in front of him. Plus one of the best backups, Luke Talich. It kind of stinks.
Well,
Walton's in an unproven place. Fitzgerald's in an unproven place. Premer's in an unproven place. And Dunham, you can rotate. So that's why I have O'Brien down at four or five. It's just he has the best players ahead of him.
Well, I understand that. Who are the boundaries that are ahead of Fitzgerald?
Gilbert and Matt Jeffrey. And then I think Fitzgerald will take it from, if he keeps it up, could take it from, and Cam Williams might be. I haven't seen Fitzgerald this whole camp, honestly. He was on the other field.
Well, in person, you're right. Yeah. I have not, in person, I have not either. It's a, we don't really have a choice. It's not like we can go over to see the second team that we don't have access to observing from that side of the field when they two spot.
We get Mike Brown this week. Perfect timing for Devin Fitzgerald. Yes, that'll be good. Final question. This is a fun one. I had brought up the not seeing any drills that mattered other than the net. Matt Tebby says, the Wimbush net was probably my list of biggest surprises ever witnessed by you guys during fall camp, which prompts the question. What are the biggest surprises, positive or negative, you guys have witnessed during fall camp that ended up as a portent for the season you cannot use the net?
Kyle Hamilton's three picks from the opening practice.
and then you start asking around. It's like three. Hell, he's got 18.
And Brady,
I mean, even Brian Kelly's reaction to it afterwards was like, did he have three picks? I don't know. They're like, all right, not only did we see something amazing, but you're already trying to downplay the one thing we just saw. This is happening.
That's a good one. Pretty sure you have a better one. You're not going to get a better one than that one, but
no, I don't think so. But the first person that came to mind as a surprise was I did not think Asmar Bilal was going to have the final year that he had in a Notre Dame uniform that he did 2019. Yep. Yeah. That was the first guy that came to mind for me.
I don't remember his camp situation. I remember Pete on the same subject. So it was 2019 preseason. Owusu-Koramoah was probably going to play Rover. There was still Asmar Bilal and Drew Wright and other guys. And we saw it in Culver. He picked off a pass. We're like, oh, that helps when you're a Rover. Then he one-on-one Chris Fink in the slot and picked off a pass. Fink, the senior. We're like, no other linebackers on the team are doing that. And Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah came to play there. Negatives, this would be mean, but I've seen some quarterback play where I was like, all right, they're going to be making fun of us. They're going to pretend to us these guys had good days. We weren't here, and I'm not going to believe it. Come on, man. You can't see all bad quarterback play, and someone's like, well, you're just in there at the wrong time. I mean, that's not how it goes down, generally. So 2022, 2011, there's just bad quarterback.
Those are bad.
And it is really bad, and it stayed bad. And it was like, oh, yeah, he had a good game. He actually had really good practice the other day. Sure he did. Those are always the ones that.
Who do you have, Pete?
Got a bad
for a negative?
Yeah. Well, we're a positive.
Well, I mean, Kyle Hamilton is my number one positive. I will say, a more here and now one, when we had that open practice at school field, that was the first time we saw Faison. And you're like, wait a minute, what's happening here?
It's good.
It's like guys just couldn't keep up with them. And so, yeah, that would be the guy on this team that I think was maybe the most informative practice performance where you're just like, This is surprising to me.
Oh, Ben Morrison. Ben Morrison's freshman practice when he went out and clocked Logan Diggs and they're supposed to not be hitting. And then he was basically started against Ohio State. I was like, wait a minute. That dude wants some smoke. And then he was out there killing people for the next
year. Remember the reputation of Houston Griffith and what he was going to do. And he was playing nickel and he could do this and that. And none of that came to fruition in a game.
But we never saw that in camp either.
Well, no, we didn't. But I mean, that was the perception of what Notre Dame had as a true freshman back there.
Man, they rotated the 2018 semifinalists undefeated until Clemson rotated Houston Griffith and Nick Coleman at nickel. And we're complaining about if Christian Gray and Dallas Golden and Jaden Sanders can play it. Just think about that. They've come a long way, and so have we. It's been a long podcast, but we'll be back on Monday. We're going to have one. Yeah, we have an access. We'll have one access before Monday's podcast. And then we have a couple more to end the training camp portion. We even have Marcus Freeman, I believe, next Friday, something around that line, guys, next Friday. So I assume that was scheduled to wrap up camp, and then they will move into Wisconsin prep. We won't move into Wisconsin prep for a long time. We're still enjoying training camp. For Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson of The Athletic, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.